I am a demographer, and thank you for that introduction, which included a lot of different topics on which I have done work. But you might notice that absent from those was sexually transmitted diseases. So I'm in a position where I am doing my best to provide you some information that I think you'll be able to use on leaving here without presuming too much. So my strategy for this next 20 minutes or so is to keep things relatively simple. And if you want to know more information about some of the background stuff, because there's a lot of it, I would invite you to come see me personally about it, rather than me try to blather on about techniques for demographic projection that probably don't interest a lot of people. Okay, this talk is going to be on the unmarried population of the United States at ages 30 to 59. And how changes in that population might be influencing work, research, epidemiology, and treatment of sexually transmitted infections. What is changing, let's see here. It is not a surprise to anyone that marriage has been decreasing in the United States for approximately half a century since the end of the baby boom. But what is less commonly known is that that decrease has not been monotonic over time, but there have been sort of ebbs and flows in the changes that have gone on. In particular, if we start around 2000 or so, the period from 2000 up to the start of the Great Recession was really typified by relative stability in marriage rates. Now, there were things going on like increases in non-marital birth rates, but those largely involved people having babies before they were marrying and then marrying, rather than marrying less. So there might have been some indication that if you were looking at patterns around 2007, you would be projecting a United States where proportions married in midlife would resume stability after some sort of transitions period. But with the Great Recession, things appear to be returning to change, and in fact, perhaps an accelerated rate of change. Starting from 2007 and going forward, marriage rates continue to decrease, and that apparently includes both first marriages and remarriages. And as of 2015, which is the latest data that is available, there is no sign that that decrease is stopping. That might be a little bit too early to presume that we are going to see a return to some sort of stable level following the Great Recession. So from a projections perspective, we have to take a look at the possibility, what are some likely futures for the unmarried population in midlife under various assumptions about what is happening with marriage rates and what is likely to continue happening in the future. Okay. Now, with respect to this 30 to 59 population that's unmarried, I will acknowledge from the outset, partly due to constraints on the large-scale long-term data and partly due to simplicity, I am not going to go too much into the great variety that exists in the unmarried population, which consists of people who are living alone, people who are in cohabiting unions, both heterosexual and homosexual, people who have children in those arrangements, people who have become unmarried via divorce or widowing, people who are still legally married but whose separations have persisted long enough that those are permanent separations, and also people who have never married in the first place. There's a tremendous variety of here, and let's see. What I would like you to think about in terms of the unmarried population is just in general what we are seeing is in midlife a expanding group of people in the United States population whose relationships and living arrangements are dynamic, either because they are persisting in being dynamic or are returning to being dynamic, either by design or because of social and economic circumstances that are very much not by design. So this is a very diverse group that we're looking at, but there are some similarities that will make them worth looking at together. And to give you a quick review of those similarities, This is not in the main part of what my analysis is, but I felt it was necessary to just go to some of the surveys that are available on sexual behavior by marital status and show you some of the important things that are going on with what I'm going to define as the midlife unmarried population. Okay, first of all, unmarried in midlife means unmarried. If you were, generally, the married population of the United States, in most survey research that, in which they're asked, whether it's the General Social Survey, which you have here, or National Survey of Adolescent Males, or National Survey of Family Growth, if you sort of identify a group that might be at high risk as having had three or more sexual partners in the last year, the married population is generally about 1 to 3%. The single population, as the blue lines become darker, we're moving from 18 to 29, 30 to 39, 40 to 49, 50 to 59, and even beyond. And particularly for males, unmarried males, and also to a large extent unmarried females, are well outside of the normal range of having large numbers of sexual partners in the last year. So the single after 30 is truly single. Another measure that you can get, sometimes you can get measures of lifetime numbers of sexual partners. This data combines numbers of males and numbers of female sexual partners that are listed in this number, but if you take a look at that separately, you get much the same pattern. And essentially, for singles who are 18 to 29, I'll just report the numbers for women. Essentially, women who are unmarried from 18 to 29 will report about an average of 5 lifetime sexual partners. And it's not shown here, but if you take a look at married women of any age in the United States, that number of sexual partners that they report pretty much stays around 5 on the population average. So it's as if, in a very crude approximation, we have a population of women who have an average of 5 sexual partners, then get married to the 5th one, and that's the number of sexual partners that they have for the rest of their married lives. Singlehood, whether it is by persistence in remaining single or by a return to singlehood, appears to add about 3 or more sexual partners to that number for women. For men, the numbers are very parallel, except they're higher. Single men in their 18 to 29 age, as well as married men not shown, will have about 9 sexual partners that they report. And then the single ones at older ages will have an additional larger number of single partners that essentially doubles the number of single partners that you have. Okay? What I hope I have established at this point is that it is interesting to look at the unmarried population in midlife. Now let's get to the main part of the analysis, which is what is going on with this population. Now, data includes the current population survey series for the United States, which is vetted through other data sources as well as possible, like the American Community Survey. And the population projection techniques are also vetted by various processes. Essentially, what I'm going to be showing you in terms of projections are kind of a wishy-washy mid-range estimate, which takes into account the fact that marriage rates have been decreasing rapidly in the last 5 years, and more or less averages out a scenario in which marriage rates continue to decrease versus a scenario in which marriage rates stay at what they are and stop decreasing. So in other words, we have a hypothesis that the post-baby boom decline in marriage rates is going to continue, and against a hypothesis that a post-baby boom decrease in marriage rates is now over, and what you will see is the average of those two hypotheses. Okay, this is going to be a measure by age of the percentage of women who will be reported as currently unmarried. And 2,000 is the number that was reported for the 2,000 in various data sources. 2015 represents the very latest data that we currently have, and 2030 represents what is projected by age 15 years, or actually right now 14 years into the future. And if we take a look at the 18 to 29-year-olds, I'm not sure if these numbers are too small to see, but what we have is in 2000, the percentage of 18 to 29-year-old women who are currently unmarried was 69%, which was quite high, In other words, the decrease in marriage rates since the baby boom had already a very large effect on the number of young adult women who were currently single. That was already locked in. It's also increasing up to 79% today and 84% projected for the future. The other thing that is projected is a modest increase in the percent currently unmarried at ages 30 to 39, 40 to 49, 50 to 59, and on. And what you'll notice is that from ages 30 forward, the proportions of women who are single and marry is balanced off by the proportions of women who divorce or become permanently separated or remain so. So what we have is a general averaging out. At ages 30 to 59, you could probably say about 34% of women in year 2000 at those ages were unmarried. That's up to about 39% today, and it's expected to be just about 40% or a little more in the future. In other words, not too much increase, but some increase in this particular measure. Now I take a look at the numbers for men, and you get a very similar pattern in terms of trends over time. I won't go into the exact numbers, but one thing I would like to point out, and I'm not sure if this would help for me to flicker back and forth, but there's a thing that I suspect would be in the duh range to most of the people here, which is that at ages 18 to 29, in young adulthood, the single population skews towards male. More males than females are in the single population. And that affects the epidemiology of sexually transmitted infections, I would assume. As the single population increases in mid-adulthood, what we have is a situation where the proportions of that population balance out and then skew towards women. So, for example, if we project to 2030, if you'll remember, the numbers I was projecting for women were about 41%. By 2030, women are expected to significantly outnumber men in the single population at ages 40 to 49, 50 to 59, and 60 to 69. If the reasons for that don't occur to people, I'll be glad to discuss it later. But I'm assuming that you guys would be way ahead of me on this, and I don't need to explain it. The implications for sexually transmitted infections, I would imagine, include infectivity. I don't know a lot about how infections transmit relatively through epithelial versus epidermal tissue, and I'm already spouting words on the edge of what I don't understand. But my suspicion is that what we are having is, in midlife, the unmarried population, by being a majority of women, will have different dynamics in terms of infectivity, and also different dynamics in terms of the extent to which infections are immediately recognizable in a population. And as a relation to that, I'm going to show you the other bit of information about the unmarried population that these projections show that is important. Did I skip over U.S. women? Oh, good. Well, I got men and women in reverse order for this second measure. But if the percentage of persons who are unmarried in mid-adulthood at any given time is increasing slightly, the aggregate number of adult years spent unmarried is increasing much more rapidly. So, for example, again, I got men first now, and because I'm using aggregate numbers of years spent, instead of having these X categories refer to specific years, they are referring to specific birth cohorts. So if the first group is U.S. men born around the year 1950. So adult years, I'm going to look at the bluest of the blue bars on the left sequence. For unmarried U.S. men born 1950 at age 50, count on average of lifetime adult years unmarried was 13.4 on average. By 1965, age 50, that would take them pretty much to today. Today's 50-year-olds, if they are unmarried, that doesn't include me, would have an average of 16.5 years spent unmarried. And for the persons born 1980, You can define that variously as late Gen X or early cusp of the millennial generation. That is projected to be 18.0, which is a significant increase. So numbers of years spent in married, unmarried is increasing rapidly. Now I go to the women, and the increases are similar there, both with respect to the increase in adult years spent unmarried is increasing more rapidly than the percent unmarried. And furthermore, those years spent unmarried are much more similar for women compared to men than the percent, you know, than other measures are. So the percent unmarried for U.S. women, if I might go, 50-year-olds born 1950, average adult years unmarried would have been 12.2. For women born 1965, that's up to 14.8. And for women born 1980, it is projected by the time they reach age 50, that'll be 16.7 adult years spent unmarried. And the idea would be this particular demographic measure, which to some extent is kind of locked in, would be an indication that the unmarried population of both men and women will have somewhat different dynamics from what it has today, but also quite different dynamics from the unmarried populations at 18 to 29, which we are more familiar with looking at. So, if I can return to our main findings, okay, unmarried adults are at risk of contracting STDs at all ages. I showed some slideshows from general social survey and other data sources that could probably be, you know, understood as meaning that the proportion of people who are potentially at risk of being at risk of sexually transmitted infections definitely is quite significant among the unmarried population at all ages. The next main finding, which comes from the demographic projections that I have, is that the percentage of U.S. adults unmarried is increasing across all adult ages. The average number of years of adulthood spent single is increasing rapidly. And then also of importance through this, the sex ratio of the unmarried population is increasingly going to skew towards women after age 30. All right. I will not pretend to understand what those implications all are, and I would hope that that might stimulate some discussions and contemplation among those of you out there who would be expected to know more about these things than I do. But I would be delighted to discuss those implications. If I have a couple minutes left, there's some additional stuff. Let's see here. I'm going to save this slide to the very end. This will be my ending slide. But if I have some time left, and I wasn't sure if I would. What?
You did.
Okay. There is a lot of this information that goes into these projections that I did not show you. To the extent that was possible, these projections are checked as a multiple rate process, of which rates the entry into first marriages is easiest to model correctly and most important to the overall population. The size of these slides and the information that's in them, clearly, for those of you in the back, there's no way you can read this font, so I will describe them. The top left figure shows the projections for the proportions who have entered into a first marriage for U.S. Hispanic women. And those proportions are decreasing. The top right, the proportions entering into a first marriage for Hispanic men. Those proportions are decreasing and projected to decrease. The proportions for non-Hispanic black women, those are decreasing and projected to continue to decrease. For non-Hispanic black men, decreasing and projected to continue to decrease. I can go to the next slide. Non-Hispanic white women and men, non-Hispanic other, which is an unfortunate category that the Census and the Bureau of Labor Statistics use, but it includes Asian persons of Asian descent and also, unfortunately, persons who report themselves as multiracial, which is a little difficult to work with. But essentially, any racial and ethnic group of any self-reported, I should say, gender gender and sex, I have been schooled to some extent, have complex meanings, but women and men of any racial and ethnic group will have different proportions who have entered into first marriages, but for any group that you can identify, these percentages are decreasing. And similarly, there's a similar set of these slides that looks within each of these groups across educational attainment, and we're getting much the same pattern. So the patterns are ubiquitous. The levels by race and ethnicity are known to vary. You know, non-Hispanic blacks have lower proportions who enter into first marriages than anybody else, but everyone alike is joining in this pattern of having increasing proportions who are going to be unmarried in midlife. One other last little thing to help describe what I would see as similarities with across racial and ethnic groups rather than important differences. Lifetime numbers of sexual partners reported for unmarried men. And the General Social Survey that provides this data can get a little thin on its sample size, but I've got the wrong source there. But essentially, if you take a look at non-Hispanic white men, non-Hispanic black men, and Hispanic men, the lifetime number of sexual partners, I'm going to look at ages 30 and older, is between 50 and 20 for the non-Hispanic white men who are unmarried, over 20 for the non-Hispanic black men, and somewhere around 15 to 20 for the Hispanic men, with variation depending on sample size. It turns out that non-Hispanic black men do, on the population totals, report more sexual partners at the same age as the non-Hispanic white men or anyone else in the population. But the large proportion of that, large share of that difference is simply marital status. Black men, on average, have more sexual partners in life, mostly because they are more likely to be unmarried. And if we take a look at the numbers for unmarried women by race, what we find is the lifetime numbers of sexual partners reported for unmarried women. Black women are significantly behind non-Hispanic white women, which might be a surprise to some, if you look only at the unmarried population. So again, non-Hispanic blacks compared to non-Hispanic whites at the overall population level report more lifetime sexual partners in midlife. But for women, those differences are more than fully explained simply by marital status. So what you can do is, rather than look to race and ethnicity, the main thing to be looking at is marital status. That will bring me back then to the questions and implications that I have left to be the last slide. I am not going to pretend to know what to do with these, so I have posed these all in the form of a question, and you can decide if other questions might be important. At a clinical level, should internists be more focused on discussing with unmarried people of all ages discussions about their marital status and sexual behavior? Certainly that is the case, and it's well understood that it's appropriate to be so now for people who are... When an adolescent, like my 15-year-old son, comes in for a checkup, he gets questioned. Is this something we should be talking about doing for a much larger swath of the population? For epidemiologists, how will these changes that I discussed affect the way that sexually transmitted infections persist in a population or spread through populations? And then for policymakers, not taking any stands on this, to what extent should promotion of marriage or support of marriage, heterosexual and or homosexual, be relevant for a policy perspective if one is interested in sexually transmitted infections? So I would welcome discussion on these questions or any others that you might come up with. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have time for a few questions, and actually I think we can open it up to questions to either speaker. Just specify which speaker you're asking the question to.
For Dr. Martin, erudite, Hunter Hansfield, University of Washington, erudite and fascinating, but it seems all of the points of discussion are marriage or not marriage, but what it means to be married is obviously different, and you probably could create a variable. You'd be better at this than what I would think of, but things such as home co-ownership, having children, having cohabited for X number of years, that by any past, in the past, would have been married with that legal status, but now are not. Can you or have you adjusted your analyses to account for people who are functionally in that married, quote-unquote, status, but not legally married? And how does that affect and influence the trends that you've just shown us?
I will answer the final question that I remember best first before I forget it, which is, to the best of my ability to look at different things, breaking apart the unmarried population into the subpopulations that it certainly deserves to be broken into does not really affect the overall story that I have described here. Within the groups and thinking to future stuff, it is certainly the case, much of the groundwork for this actually came from work I do doing demographic projections that were very interested in the unmarried population for very other purposes, like trying to project home equity and assets in the retired population for future generations. So this little work that I've been able to share with you shows clearly the evidence of where it came from. However, the projection methods in terms of being able to project across a lifetime of cohorts and ages does constrain us to some extent with respect to what data we can bring together and also how useful that data is at allowing us to generalize to a national level. One thing that I can share that is probably the first and most important critical thing to break apart is whether someone is sharing a living arrangement with a sexual partner. Cohabiting unions versus living alone are quite an important difference. The difference between those two is in some respects less important than the difference between being married and being in a cohabiting union. But if this very, very preliminary work is to lead to some very serious modeling, I think that the most important thing we should make sure to get in first would be relationship status in living arrangements for cohabiting unions.
I'm Gaurav Nagar from North Dakota Department of Health. My question is for Dr. Martin. A very informative presentation, by the way.
Okay.
I have a couple of assumptions, and I want to know if I'm correct on those. The male-to-female ratio in the general population up till the age of 70, I'm assuming it's approximately 1.
Mm-hmm.
So you have underlined so many discrepancies in the male and female rates of intercourse and mm-hmm. marital status and such stuff. Shouldn't it arouse suspicion that there has been some mistake in reporting, because it should vary since the prevalence of males to females is in the ratio 1:1, then if a male has 4 female partners, a subsequent conclusion, a corollary to that should be that the females should have 4 male partners.
Okay. May I? And this is with the assumption, when I brought this up to an epidemiologist, she confirmed my suspicions on this. There are a couple things that are going on with the idea. Yes, given that very, very few of the marriages that are being self-reported here are homosexual marriages, one would expect that we have a population of marriages 1 female to 1 male, which would mean that the residual single population would be 1 female to 1 male.
Yes.
Now, that is a residual population, so if there are some differences, those differences would be magnified in the residual population. So the fact that death rates in, say, the 50s are higher for men than for women will have some of a disproportionate effect on these patterns. In addition, differences in cohort sizes. Baby booms, given that there are some differences in marriage ages, can have a little bit of a tweaking effect. Certainly not what they have in in nations like India and China, where there have been significant year-to-year differences in the size of the marrying population. Age differences in marriage can have huge effects on the relative sizes of the single population. It can have a little bit in the United States. But most of this is simply a trade-off between youth and older ages. Both before age 30, there really is an excess of single males. So the one-to-one theory would say that somewhere else there needs to be a paucity of single males. And it shows up later in the life course. And where that comes from is, to some extent, a couple-year difference in average marriage ages, but is strongly influenced by large differences in ages at remarriage. There are large differences in the number of mid-adult men who marry much younger women than there are mid-adult women who marry much younger men. And again, this is a residual part of the population. So sex differences that might seem small in terms of the aggregate population will be magnified in terms of the unmarried population.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And thanks to both of our speakers for an excellent session. And thank you.